This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, March 18th, 2024. I'm Caleb Brown. The president laid out in his State of the Union address a potential subsidy for certain home buyers and home sellers. But if you think in this seller's housing market that buyers will be absorbing much, if any, of that subsidy, you are probably mistaken. Cato's Mark Calabria talks about what would be most effective at boosting the availability of affordable housing. Mark, you were in the middle of the pandemic, so to speak, at least as it related to the housing market and families attempting to have housing, secure housing. And in terms of the wake of the pandemic and the related sort of too clever by half laws that were passed in the immediate wake of the pandemic, what were we left with? What changed about the housing market between then and now, or what was made worse or better?
You know, it's really interesting to reflect upon because, you know, from about February to May of 2020, home sales decreased 30%. Most of us at the beginning of COVID thought that prices would come down and that we risked a repeat of 2008. And of course, you know, some of this stuff I talk about in my book, Shelter from the Storm. But, you know, it all turned out to be very different, obviously, because of some policy choices that were made. And instead, we got one of the biggest housing booms we've probably had in my lifetime. You know, sales and prices and refinancing were all off the chart 2020, 2021. So rather than a sort of housing deflation or housing bust, we got a crazy housing boom. Some of this was in direct response to both state, you know, not just federal, but state and local policy. So for instance, many families, you know, their reaction to the lockdowns and the school closures was to say, I'm going to move my kids to somewhere where the schools are open. And we saw a lot of that. So tremendous amount of mobility, changes in direction, often from what were higher cost housing markets to lower house cost housing markets. So you can imagine, say, a family moving from the Bay Area, San Francisco to Boise. You know, think about how far your money's going to go there. And also, if you think about it, much smaller housing market. So you saw these really just big booms really drove affordability problems where, you know, outside money was coming in on what had been much lower price points in the housing market. You know, obviously, we had record low interest rates, in part because of actions from the Federal Reserve, where it wasn't unusual during the pandemic to get a mortgage at 3%. You know, and now we're in a world where many of these stimuluses have drove up prices, have drove up interest rates. You know, mortgage rates are at minimum twice what they were during the pandemic. And again, we've seen all this fiscal stimulus really drive up demand.
On that point, I'm among these people, so I can I can speak to the personal experience of it, of buying a house in the middle of 2020. I would be lying if I said my wife and I knew what was happening at the time or where we would be.
None of us did, really.
But we find ourselves very fortunate. You mentioned a wave of refinances of people getting sub 3, sometimes 2.5% or lower mortgages. And President Biden in his State of the Union address wants to address part of this for what he terms people who are locked in to low mortgages and feel like they can't move. He would like to, apparently, and tell me if I'm wrong here, he would like to see more churn in the housing market, that is, houses turning over, and wants to provide financial incentives to get people to sell their homes. And in fact, this is from the White House. Before his State of the Union address, they write, President Biden will call on congressional Republicans to end years of inaction and pass legislation to lower costs by providing a $10,000 tax credit for first-time homebuyers and people who sell their starter homes. So if the cash benefit is on both sides, that is first-time homebuyers and sellers,
yep,
you might expect sellers to absorb more than that $10,000 benefit,
if not pretty much all of it. Yeah. So let's start with the observation. And, you know, even though I myself have used the term lock-in, I don't love the phrase because you're not locked in. You're just disincentivized from selling. Because the problem is, like for you and your family, Caleb, you know, were you to sell, and give up your 3% mortgage, you might buy a better house you like more, but you're going to be giving that up 3% mortgage for a 7% mortgage. So it's a big disincentive effect for existing homeowners to put their homes on the market, which of course decreases housing availability, you know, for people who start up. Because the way the housing market, of course, works is, you know, you buy up and you sell down, and you know, the housing ladder, if you will. So yeah, it has, again, I hate to use the word, but frozen the housing ladder to some degree. And it's harder for first-time home buyers to get on that ladder because people aren't selling who would normally be selling because they're disincentivized. And because as we go back, I mean, I hate to say Econ 101, maybe this is more Econ 102, the question of tax incidence. So the president has proposed a benefit for both sellers and buyers, but it's a seller-constrained market. So all that subsidy ultimately would be captured. I mean, and I'm actually comfortable saying pretty much all of that subsidy would be captured by the seller.
And related to that, not to be forgotten, is when you're goosing demand for housing in a severely constrained market where housing is produced in far lower unit numbers than you and I might prefer, you're just talking about raising the price.
Yeah, absolutely. I somewhat describe it that the administration looks at the housing market and says, here are two people bidding against each other for this one house. You know, why don't we add a third bidder? You know, or why don't we, you know, give more money to the people bidding against each other? You know, rather than the real solution is how do you increase supply? Now, yes, the administration has said, oh, we're worried about supply, but their reaction to supply is predominantly to increase demand, which of course make it worse. So there certainly is a big misdiagnosis of how you address the fundamental problem. And even things where they seem to kind of recognize, okay, well, let's get more people to sell their homes. Well, those people are also going to buy homes. It's not like, for instance, like you and your wife, if you sold your home, you'd buy another home. You're not going to suddenly be out of the housing market. So there's a net-net. And of course, let's set aside, you know, the awfully regressive nature of what they're proposing in a way is to give a subsidy to existing homeowners who are by and large wealthier than first-time home buyers or renters. So it's really a regressive subsidy to get people who have had the windfall, good luck, as you touched upon, to buy and see a lot of house price appreciation. So it's not only, you know, Caleb, not only have you done great by having, you know, several years of strong price appreciation, President Biden wants to give you an additional windfall of a subsidy, if only you would sell and put your house back on the market.
Thank you, President Biden.
Yeah, I mean, looking out for those truly in need.
In any normal market, when we see price appreciation, and as we just mentioned, the president would like to goose demand in some way, you would see an increase in production to meet that demand to bring those prices back down. But in housing, it doesn't seem to work that way.
Or it also takes a really long time. So we are building a lot of housing in this country. And one of the unintended consequences of the so-called lock-in effect is that new homes are at record percent of sales overall. So normally, you know, new homes are, you know, 10, 12, maybe 15% of home sales overall, and the rest are existing homes. But, you know, we're much closer to say 25%. I mean, there's some arguments, you know, in the data what actually is the percent. But there's general agreement that new home sales are at record percents of overall sales. And you're also seeing builders try to price lower in the price point. So the builders are trying to figure out, well, there's a shortage of entry-level housing, so let's build entry-level housing. But there are limits to that. You know, we also have to remember with all the additional stimulus like the CHIPS Act and the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, you know, when we're building all of these plants for semiconductors, we're competing for construction labor. We're competing for construction materials prices. So part of the problem is, builders would actually even produce cheaper houses if they could, but all the fiscal stimulus for construction is competing with home construction prices. And that's putting a little bit of a floor on under how low prices could go for builders. Part of the problem is with the construction, not just the prices of materials and labor, but land use as well. And the problem with land use is not only that it restricts supply, but it takes it so much longer to get the supply online. So, you know, what could take 6 months becomes 9 months, 12 months. And so you see a bigger disconnect. So, yes, the fundamental problem with the housing market is dysfunctional, but it's dysfunctional because of state, local, federal policies.
So much of what restricts housing supply are policies that are set by state and local governments. It's not exactly clear to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, what the federal role would be except to get out of the way. The president seems to want to go a different direction in terms of goosing supply, which is to say subsidies for the construction of new homes. It strikes me that to the extent that this is a state and local problem, there have to be state and local solutions.
So, I mean, let's pull that apart a little bit. I mean, let's start with the easy part of even the things that the administration have claimed would increase supply don't really. So one of the more popular is a tax credit for developers, but the developer still has to bid for the land. So ultimately, if the binding constraint here is developable land, because you look at a developer and say, oh, the developers increase supply. So if we subsidize developers, that increases supply. Not really, because what ultimately it means is I'm giving the developer more money to simply bid up land prices, because you aren't actually fundamentally increasing land. Now, the federal government has played a role. So, for instance, before Herbert Hoover was president, he was Secretary of Commerce, and he really went around the country trying to convince localities, you know what you need? You need zoning. And so the federal government did play a really big role in encouraging localities around America to adopt restrictive zoning practices. So I do think that, A, Washington can at least use the bully pulpit, if you will, to say it would be great if localities around America deregulated. I'm very skeptical about proposals to give, you know, financial incentives, because at the end of the day, they're never going to be big enough. They're going to go to places that are going to liberalize their markets anyhow, and it's mostly going to be wasted money that will probably mostly go to consultants, you know, people to do studies rather than actually liberalize. But I do think ultimately none of this is going to work unless you can get localities to choose to liberalize. Now, there are certainly things you could do with the Supreme Court level. I mean, you know, it was a big mistake, in my opinion, over 100 years ago for the Supreme Court to say, yeah, you know, affordable housing is a nuisance and can be zoned out. So I do think that there are things we could do at the Supreme Court level. Of course, that's hard. You need to litigate. You need a recognition that property rights are actually important. But yes, ultimately, the most immediate changes can come and have to come from state and local governments. Now, the positive is, you know, places like Montana, for instance, we've seen really big changes to liberalize. You know, even in California, which is ground zero for housing unaffordability, there's at least a conversation going. Many of the proposals are useful, but of course, there are harmful proposals. And we've seen a lot of proposals at the state and local level to bring back things like rent control, which do more harm than good. So, but at least there's a conversation going. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, any immediate short-term relief is going to have to come from state and local governments.
Mark Calabria is author of Shelter from the Storm, recounting his time as head of the Federal Housing Finance Agency. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you please. And thank you for listening.